Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in. My name is Matthew Hadawani, and I am extremely excited to be joined by one of the most prominent and beloved voices in Hamilton Sports Radio, Marshall Ferguson. Marshall, how are you doing today, man?
I'm excellent. Thank you for the kind introduction. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. All the pleasure is mine. So we'll start from the beginning here. So you attended McMaster University, where you graduated the BA in poli-sci and government while all playing quarterback for the Marauders. Was football kind of the path you always envisioned yourself following, or did you ever kind of want to pursue your poli-sci roots?
You know what? Poli-sci, it's funny. When I went into university, I actually wanted to come out the other side as a phys ed teacher. Like, I love working with kids and I love being able to stay active, and I wanted to find a way that I could combine those things. And then I wanted to go to Mac because of football, because it was a perfect fit for me, both for the vibe of the campus, the coaching staff, the team. And so I had an option: go somewhere where I could focus solely on academics and probably not play university football, or play university football, hope that it would open some doors and get a degree in something that I'd probably never use. And unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on how you view it working out as it is, I stand here today. I decided to go to McMaster because I thought I've always been interested in geography and history and politics and humanities. And those things still pique my interest. I mean, I play Jeopardy. I watch 60 Minutes every Sunday like I'm an elderly person. I mean, all those things have always interested me. So to get a poli-sci degree, I mean, it was enjoyable. It kept me intrigued. I kept engaged in all my classes. It helped me to get through university and to stay eligible and to play. If I was really, truly going after what I believe I should have been doing academically, it would have been something more towards education, physical education, training, strength and conditioning, something of that nature. But football opened a lot of doors for me, so I'm extremely thankful for the opportunity. And in the long road, right, if your journey ends up where you feel happiest, then I think that it's a success. And I do deem it to be a success, despite the fact that I don't have a steady job as of right now.
That's tough. but you touched on it, you know, McMaster, really one of the powerhouse programs in U Sports and, you know, all of Canadian football. While you were playing quarterback there, obviously, because it's such a demanding position, both mentally and physically, did you find it challenging at all to kind of balance the classroom and the playbook?
You know what? I didn't put enough effort into the playbook. It's something that I look back on that I regret, in all honesty, because I look at what it takes to really truly hone your craft now as I am around professional football players and I talk to professional football quarterbacks all the time. And I think to myself, I was sitting at home playing video games on Friday nights before big games against Western. I'm like, the hell was I doing? Like, it's frustrating, honestly, to go back. And even things like, I've been basically a vegetarian, vegan, not exclusively, but for the most part for about a year and a half. And my body just, it feels better. Like I feel leaner and I'm still able to put muscle on, and my strength and conditioning stuff is, mm-hmm. you know, it's a little up and down because as you age, that stuff changes. But I even stuff like that, I look back and I think to myself, like whether it be the playbook or it be the strength and conditioning or the diet, or so many things you could have done better, man. If it just had the knowledge of yourself at 30 when you're 20, man, we would all be such better athletes. But I did balance it well, I think. I mean, it's your typical thing that I always heard from coaches was there's three things that will dominate your life in university, and you can only be good at two of them. And the three options were academics, athletics, and social life. Mm-hmm. And for me, I was a loser, so I didn't really have to worry about the social life side of things. But I did find that balance at times difficult. With that being said, I was also in social sciences with a special in political science. And I've got a stepdaughter now who is in nursing first year at McMaster. And she's done more work in the last 8 months remotely than I think I did in my entire career when I was there academically. So I have absolutely nothing to cry about. And I also don't think I should be championed as a hero of academia because I was able to figure out how to balance those two things. Because I was not in a program that required, you know, we had a defensive tackle, Adam Dixon, who was an engineer. And once in a while, he would just miss two practices in the middle of an important week because he had midterms. And everybody in the program was like, yeah, that's fine. That totally makes sense. You're a crazy person for wanting to be an engineer and commit the amount of time that it takes to be a starter. He was our starting defensive tackle. He was a big, strong dude, and he was able to balance it. And so I think people like that in those programs, they're the ones I really look at and go, man, I can't believe they're able to pull that off.
Yeah, I mean, we hear stories all the time in NCAA how, you know, players are, you know, they lose eligibility because they can't balance that stuff. But to find somebody who can, you know, balance a engineering degree on top of playing, you know, the highest football that you can at that age is incredible. For you growing up, was it always football? I mean, typically in Canada, you know, football isn't always the first sport that people go to, you know, stereotypically is always hockey. But for you, it seems like you've been all football all the time.
Yeah, so I'm very thankful because I grew up as a multi-sport athlete for the majority of my life. And that's really fueled my love for, as I say, trying to keep my body in shape. And because I just like doing everything, anything that keeps me moving, I think is a huge plus. So, I mean, when I was really little, I was a T-ball kid. And then I was into house league soccer. And then when I got a little bit older in grade 5 was the first time that I fell in love with a sport, and it was basketball. Never played hockey, never got on a set of skates more than pond hockey or going to a local skate on a Friday night with my dad to kill some time. Mm-hmm. It was always basketball. It was always, I love hoops, man. I always have, I always will. It was my first true love. I played it from grade 5 in the Ontario Basketball Association all the way up to the end of high school. And the entire time that I was in elementary school, my parents were kind of thinking about where are we going to get him his education and what can we set him up with to have the greatest amount of success. And there was a high school in Kingston at Frontenac that had a really successful basketball team. And I played OBA with a bunch of kids that were going to that high school. So we said, well, let's just keep our team together. But the problem is Marshall needs to move into the city in order to make that happen, because I was living way out in the sticks. And it was great because I had a basketball hoop on a driveway that the next house over was like a kilometer on either side of me. So it was fantastic. But at the same time, it's like you got to not have your parents driving you 40 minutes to your high school every single day when their jobs are on the other side of town. So I ended up getting this opportunity to go to this high school. We moved into the city about half a kilometer from the high school. So I was walking to and from every day. And the thinking on that was that I would get a basketball scholarship in the OUA, that would help me accelerate my academic success and my opportunities using sports. Well, by the end of grade 9, the basketball coach at my high school where I've gone to play basketball says, by the way, all 12 guys on this basketball team, you're all playing football. We're like, what? Yeah, you're all playing football. Why? Because you're not tough enough. We need a tougher basketball team. So you're all playing football. So I was like, all right, well, I always love watching football on television. I've never played it before. So I didn't start until grade 10, even trying to play football. And then I fell in love with it. And by the end of my high school career, I was a god-awful basketball player who was like, was like the 7th or 8th guy off the bench because I was training for football endlessly. And again, some things help, right? Footwork, decision-making. I love playing point guard, but when I was in basketball, I was one of the bigger kids on my team, and I was our primary ball handler on our OBA team. The reason right. for that is I love passing. Well, when I figured out that there's a job in football that your only job is to pass, I'm like, yeah, that's awesome. I don't have to play defense. I don't have to shoot. I don't have to do it. Like, I don't have to do anything. I just have to find the right person. That seemed like it was designed for me, which is when I really fell in love with quarterbacking. And then from there, grade 11 on, the next 7 years was just this torrid love affair with throwing footballs and studying defenses.
That's incredible. Usually it's the other way around. I mean, people go from the football field to the basketball court because, you know, they can kind of wiggle in free space. So putting them out on the court, it can help them get some buckets. But transitioning to how you kind of got started in the media, in 2014, you joined the Hamilton Ironmen Football Club as a media director there. When you were there, was that kind of a position that you had somebody looking over your shoulder, kind of like, this is what we envisioned for it? Or is it kind of just like, here's the website, here are the reins, go wild?
I made up that job. I went to the, I'm serious about this. I went to the Hamilton Ironman. See, I've always been a bit of a hustler in this way. And I went to the Hamilton Ironman and I said, you guys don't have anybody trying to raise your profile? They're like, no. I'm like, okay, I can get sponsorship from Boston Pizza down the street because I work there as a server. Right. I was like, I can get them to buy me a Sony Handycam and a couple of microphones, and I can come to your games and I can interview some players and I can shoot some stuff. And they had somebody that was working on the website design a little bit. I'm like, okay, now we've got a home for content. I know I feel comfortable generating content. I know football. I know how to have these conversations. And so it was, it basically grew from Hamilton to these freelance deals where the Mississauga Warriors or the Brampton Bulldogs would call me on a Friday night and go, hey, can you come cover our game tomorrow afternoon? Sure. Okay. That sounds awesome. How much is it worth? $200? Of course I'm there. You pay cash. Amazing. And so I would go and do these games kind of, you know, I'd be working as a server throughout the days. And then on weekends, I'd go and cover these junior football games. And I knew that it was just a venue to get my name out there covering football. And right. From there, I knew that I wanted to get onto bigger and better things, but it was a love for the game at my core that opened that door for me to go onto those bigger and better things. But yeah, that was a self-created idea that all I needed was somebody to say, sure, and to give me enough funding to get a couple of pieces of equipment. And then we were off and running.
In 2014, you were a very busy person as you also started working for the Hamilton radio station 93.3. You were covering volleyball games there and other sporting events, as well as hosting a radio show. Did you kind of always envision yourself as someone in front of the camera?
Yeah, I think so. I've always enjoyed kind of having the energy that being on camera on mic brings. I think that it's an exhilarating challenge, which is what I enjoy about it, because you lose that rush of having the feel of being in front of thousands of people when you're actually competing. And I think in a strange way, I kind of replaced that once I was finished playing with being able to, you know, craft ideas and takes and have conversations that I thought were entertaining for people. So yeah, working in the media, my dad worked in a television or radio station, but he worked behind the scenes. He was the creative services supervisor for CKWS television in Kingston, which for the majority of my lifetime, I think they're with Global now, but they were a CBC affiliate. So, you know, the only television station in the area, and he was cutting and designing and writing scripts for all the commercials and presenting them to partners and sponsors. And yeah, he was working that for my entire life. I mean, he retired from working probably 5 years ago, but my entire upbringing, that's what he did. So I think I got a little bit of the bug from wandering into a legitimate television studio. I was in some commercials when I was a kid. There's one out there, if you want to look it up, called The Looney Shake. I'm serious about this. People will laugh if they look this up. This is like a highly guarded family secret that I always enjoy shocking people with. If you search Looney Shake on YouTube, the top video is for Reed's Dairy, which is essentially an Eastern Ontario chain of milkshake and like cheese curds.
Yeah.
And in that video, I'm one of the only kids that got a speaking part. And it's like very little Marshall Ferguson with like bright, bright bleach blonde hair. Just being an idiot, like just for 30 seconds, just running off the walls and just crushing these milkshakes. But I think it was little things like that, being in those commercials, because they didn't want to have to pay for talent. So they just got my dad, who worked at the TV station, to say, Brian, you want to bring your kids on the weekend? We'll shoot a commercial with them. Yeah, sure. What the hell? So my sister and I would end up in television commercials for local car dealerships, where we'd be like holding my mom's hand and walking towards our new Chevy truck or things of that nature. So I think that in a kind of a subliminal way, that did influence the whole idea and concept of being on camera.
And for those people who know, Reed's Dairy is elite level chocolate milk, especially
yes,
Prince Edward County. That stuff flows like water out there. Tremendous.
Yeah, that's what people do out in the Peck, is that they just have the wine they chase with the Reed's Dairy chocolate milk.
I don't know how that sits in the stomach after a couple of rounds, but just a year later in 2015, you actually landed a position with the Hamilton Tiger Cats, covering the team there, going from youth football to the professional level. What was it like, you know, being around the personnel every day and interviewing players like at that level?
Scary, honestly, because it was a level that was above my understanding at that point. I understand football. I'm a university football player, but to challenge, I mean, it's that constant push pull that you feel to analyze somebody, to credit them, to criticize them, to be fair, but to be honest. And I didn't really know where that line was. Mm-hmm. And that was a difficult thing to learn and understand. I'm sure you've gone through it, Matt, where you're in interviews with somebody after they lose a game 60-1. You're like, the hell do I ask this guy? He doesn't want to talk to me right now. He has no interest, but I got to do my job. You go in there and you ask a question to them and you try to get what you can. And if you get nothing, you understand, but it doesn't really help your show. Okay, now I got to find a different way to figure out how to tell the story of this game. And it's, I think that all of that was a learning process that I'm still learning, and I'll continue to learn for as long as I'm working in media. I don't think we ever stop or complete our understanding. It's not like a course where you finish it and somebody gives you a pass. Mm-hmm. I think every day you're being judged on how you handle those situations. And for me in the early days, I just remember just scrambling like endlessly, just trying to make sure that I was doing a good job, that I was answering the bell for every round, whether that be a practice, a game, a show, whatever it might have been. It's just, I wanted to bring great coverage, but I didn't know what great coverage meant. Mm-hmm. And so I was just doing everything. You know, I look back on it, I'm doing a YouTube feature and for 3 weeks, and then I realized it's too much work and I stopped doing it. And then I do a certain bit on the show where I want to do an interview with a player, and then we do this, and then, well, the production doesn't really make sense. And it was just scatterbrained, right? Whereas I think over time, you start to understand the media game, and you also start to understand how to use those relationships to your advantage that you develop over time that help you. And I think you start to refine, and that refinement and that specialization, I think, is what you kind of see that I'm working on now, which is Canadian football specific coverage at Canadian Football Perspective, but doing it in a way where it's like, okay, here's what we offer. Here's where you can get it. Here's why we think it's good. And that's the evolution, I think, of scatterbrained 2015, 16 me going, wow, I got a job. TSN, this is amazing. Let me do everything. And then you quickly realize, no, you can't do everything, man. You got to figure out what you want to do, and you got to be great at it. Otherwise, it's not going to last very long.
Yeah, and I'm sure you can attest to this, but I mean, media is one of those rare industries where there's no formula to success. I mean, it's not like a science or a math where, you know, you plug in these variables and you have your answer. But media is one of those places where, you know, you really have to find your footing, find what works for you, what's doing too much, what's doing not enough. But speaking of doing too much, later on in your career, you actually took on two roles you were working for, TSN 1150, all while being the play-by-play voice for the Hamilton Tigercats. At that point in your career, were there certain things that you could talk about, you know, in the broadcast booth that you couldn't talk about on the radio show and vice versa? And how did those two jobs kind of, you know, work together, but also kind of work against each other?
I think it was, you know, having a show that is personality driven and opinion based, which is what any talk radio show is, is far different than what you are being asked to do in the play-by-play booth, which is to deliver the facts and the information to people so they can enjoy the game. You're always going to sprinkle in some of your personality, but it's never going to be as much as a show. So for me, I think it just came back to the idea that you kind of got to be a chameleon at times in media, and whatever role you're asked to do, if you want me to be orange with pink spots, I can do that for you. If you need me to be blue with red spots, I can do that for you too. And you have to be multiple, and you have to understand what fits that moment. And understanding the moment, again, is one of those things that takes a little while to develop, for sure. So once I understood where the guidelines were on play-by-play of how much opinion is needed and how much is wanted by the listener, as somebody who listens to play-by-play, I'm going, you know, I don't need Chris Cuthbert telling me why he thinks that Ken Austin doesn't run the ball enough. So why would I be doing that? That's not important. But if I'm doing a 3-hour radio show and the topic comes up in conversation, I was lucky because it was never, you know, if you go over the line, you say, Brian Simmons is the worst offensive lineman in the CFL. The Ticats need to cut his ass immediately because he's a useless human being. There's going to be some issues there. Like that's normal to go up against that type of stuff. But I think it's again, like the early days of TSN, figuring out where those lines exist. Mm-hmm. You can push them a little bit, but then you start to ask yourself the question of, is it worth pushing the boundaries on some of this stuff? Because sometimes it's worth it, but a lot of the time it's not worth the trouble or the headache. And there's a constant, I think something that we see more and more in sports media today is this relationship between the rights, the broadcast rights, and the partners who are bringing you those games, where ESPN doesn't want to talk about concussions in the NFL. Well, why is that? Because Monday Night Football, like, it's kind of important to them. And it's, well, I don't blame them for not wanting to talk about that. They have a monetary relationship with a partner who says, please don't talk that much about that thing. Mm-hmm. But then you really have to look at everything that's being said in media and have your flag kind of up, your sonar on, okay, what's their partnership and why are they saying what they're saying? If you can get to the point where you don't have to think about that, that's when you know you found a really solid entity where they don't make you think twice about everything that they are giving to you as content. So the Ticats were pretty lenient with me on those things, thankfully, as partners with us at TSN 1150, which I am very thankful for right up until the very end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's incredible. You know, we've heard a lot during this COVID impacted season, especially with the NFL, that, you know, with no fans in the stands, it really makes a difference for the play on the field. But as a broadcaster being in that booth, do you feed off the fans as well too?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I one of my favorite calls is Emmanuel Davis for the Ticats. I think in 2018 off the top of my head, Labor Day, back and forth game, high scoring, just classic CFL. And you end up having Emmanuel Davis pick off a pass. And it's one of those calls where you kind of have the out of body experience. And I just screamed because I saw it and I was shocked. and he gets the interception. And as he starts running back the other direction, cuts back at the 25, 20, 15, 10. Happy Labor Day, Hamilton. And I just started screaming Happy Labor Day as if it was Christmas. And I didn't know why I did it. But looking back on it, it's like, well, because I felt as soon as the interception was made, even though I'm 14 stories up at Tim Hortons Field, we've got a microphone out the window that's picking up the crowd. And I can feel the entire stadium go with energy. Just quickly, it explodes. There's that reverberation of, whoa, shockwave, something happened. And as soon as you feel that, it does make things feel different. It's the part of the reason why I am enamored with broadcasters who have been broadcasting NCAA basketball games, NBA games, NHL games from their basement without fans. Like, all you get is the sound of sticks and pucks and banging off the boards and the glass rattling, and they can still bring the energy. Kevin Harlan, you wouldn't know that he's calling the game from his basement if you had not known that he was in his basement, because his call sounds the exact same. That's a super, super elite special skill set to have that I don't think I have. I've thought about it. If the Ticats said, hey, you're going to be calling all the games, you got to do it from your basement, I'd be like, okay, sounds good. And then I go, man, this is going to be tough. Like, I don't know how you pull this off and make it sound genuine and energetic, but something tells me we would figure it out if that's the way they wanted to do it. But at the same time, you fuel the game day experience, and the game day experience fuels you, I think is the simplest way to put it.
Yeah, to the point on Kevin Harlan, I mean, if you compare a game that he's calling in his basement to one actually at the arena, you wouldn't be able to tell the difference. While you were working for the Hamilton Tiger Cats, you were also an analyst for the CFL. How different is it covering a team versus covering a league?
Team specific, you really get to kind of get into the nitty gritty and find out the little things that are interesting to the fans that love that team. For the CFL, covering them, I think it gives you a greater amount of freedom because you feel like it's this big play box and they've given you all the colors to paint with. You don't just have black and gold anymore. So you can kind of figure out how you want to approach it. And you can, because you know how one team operates pretty closely because you're always around them. Then you start to hear things about how other teams operate. You go, wow, okay, that's different. And you realize there's different approaches to this and people like to do their jobs in different ways. And this is interesting to me. And I think for me, the best part of covering the league as a whole has been studying quarterback play, because it gives you a reference point for where Hamilton stands in the greater scheme and in the big picture of the CFL. If I just have numbers on Jeremiah Masoli, that's great. But if I can't compare them to Bo Levi Mitchell, Mike Riley, Trevor Harris, et cetera, I don't know if Bo Levi Mitchell's better or worse than Jeremiah Masoli. I don't know if Mike Riley's better or worse than Trevor Harris and all these different metrics. So, you know, you start kind of following these things closely and then you expand your view to the whole league. And it gives you that, again, perspective, which is why I named this new program I'm working on, CF Perspective. It gives you that perspective to understand the bigger picture and where people kind of fit into the landscape of Canadian football. And I think that's been the best part of looking at the league as a whole. But there are certainly differences. And I think sometimes in, covering the entire league, it feels like there's too much to cover. And sometimes when you end up seeing, what's happening in inside of a team, it feels like there's too little to cover. So it's a difficult balance, but it's one that, again, I have great admiration for people that are beat writers that are covering the Jays for 162 and they got to write a story every single day, because that's really difficult to do. And again, like Harlan, it's a pretty special skill set. I don't think I would have if I was put in that spot, but the people that do it well, there's a reason that they are appreciated the way they are.
Was there ever a conflict of interest? You know, obviously still being employed by the Tiger Cats, you can't, you know, be openly critical about the team, but in one platform you could be if you wanted to. So was there, did you ever have to butt heads with yourself on kind of, you know, how far can I take this role?
I've been lucky because for the most part, the Ticats have always been pretty good. I mean, that's, you got to stay true to yourself at the same time. So, you know, they try to hire Art Briles and I'm fundamentally against it. I'm going to be honest about that. And I was, and I went on radio and I wrote about it and all the rest that was wrong based on what I had understood of his past at Baylor and his inability to react in an appropriate time and manner to sexual assault allegations from his team, his athletes on a university campus. We didn't get any pushback from that on the Ticats. Why? Because we weren't wrong. We were just doing what we believed in, which was we were on the right side of history on that, I believe, even with the information that's come out afterwards. So the thing that I think is been probably the biggest banging of the two heads against each other is, you know, when the Ticats were 0-8 and it just got awful. I mean, they couldn't get anything right for the first chunk of the season. And CJ Gable is viewed as this wonderful pass blocker. And I'm watching game film. And again, this is early on in my career. And I think it's a mistake that I made, but at the same time, it's one I learned from. So I'm thankful from is seeing CJ Gable on three plays in the game where they go to 0-6 or 0-7, either not caring to block, not wanting to block, not seeing the person he needed to block, and then seeing Zach Collaros running for his life, trying not to get injured. And I'm sitting there going, like, in 2015, Zach had a torn ACL.
Yeah.
Your number one priority should be to block for him. CJ Gable, the narrative on him is he's this incredible blocker. So I send out three clips on Twitter of, hey, you know, CJ Gable, this is not contributing to them having any success. This is a problem right here that they are having. And I wasn't at practice that day because I was busy watching film. Well, I found out that CJ Gable had walked around the stadium looking for me that day because somebody had tagged him in those posts on social media, and he was ready to rip my head off if he had seen me. And so at that point, you run into a problem where you have openly criticized. And I got calls from people inside the organization saying, what the hell do you think you're doing?
Yeah.
And my answer was, I'm trying to give honest analysis. And they weren't saying, well, stop giving honest analysis. They were saying your analysis is wrong. I said, well, I have to trust what I see and what I understand. And what I understood was that was a bad team that had a problem at a specific position that was causing stress to be put on their most valuable player in Zach Collaros. So that was that's probably the most tense that it's ever felt before, was trying to explain to people that, listen, we can have a disagreement on what the problem is here, but your record clearly shows that there's something wrong here that needs to be dealt with. I'm just out here making suggestions for what I see as an analyst. So that was a tricky one to dance for sure, because that was the first time I'd really run into that issue.
You touched on it briefly at the beginning here, but you know, TSN 1150 was part of the Bell Media cuts alongside Vancouver and Winnipeg. Can you kind of just take me through that moment when you found out that, you know, the station that you worked for the better part of, you know, 5-6 years, that was coming to an end?
Yeah, so I was getting ready to do our free agency special show, which is an unpaid 3-hour radio show that Kyle Mello and I would put on every year in the second Tuesday in February. And I was essentially, you know, I go and use the washroom and I'm running back into the studio. I was trying to set up a Twitch stream. I had all the stuff that I was looking forward to putting together and bringing our CFL listeners that we so passionately loved. And my boss's boss was waiting around the corner when I came back, and I did not realize that why she was there, but she said, you should get your stuff and go home. And I went, okay. And I closed the door to the studio and I called my fiance and I said, hey, I'm pretty sure I don't have a job anymore. I'm just going to let you know right now that this is kind of how this typically goes down in media, is you walk around a corner, somebody's there, they say, get your stuff, and boom, it's over, right? It happens in a second. And I told my fiance when she was my girlfriend, when I was first talking to her, I'm like, I just want you to know, one day I'm just going to call you and I'm not going to have a job anymore. Like, that's how this goes in this industry. And she was like, at the start, what are you talking about? How is that even possible? That's not how they do it. I go, it is. And one day I'll prove to you that I'm not lying. And so when I got home that day, I opened up the door. I go, I wasn't kidding. I warned you like 4 years ago. Like, this is how this was going to go. So yeah, that was how I found out. And then unfortunately it ended pretty quickly. So I wish we could have kept going, but at the same time, it's opened up some doors, I think, creatively for me, that will allow me to continue to doing the work that I love. Do I have a salary? No. Do I have benefits? No. Are those the most important things in life? No. And so I'm sure that those things will follow again if somebody realizes what I do and values what I do. But for now, you know, I've got a 5-month-old son and I've got a studio basement set up where I can do a lot of the work I was doing before. And, you know, I found some partners that want to help us financially to get through for the next little while until we figure out kind of in the big picture where we want to go with this. But I'm looking forward to the next challenge for sure, because it was a great journey at TSN. And it's also one of those things, Matt, I have the appreciation of knowing that I got an afternoon drive radio show in a market the size of Hamilton, straight out of university. That doesn't happen. No. and it's not because I was this incredible generational talent coming up in radio that was can't miss. He's going to kill the ratings book. He's got this huge fan base that's coming with him. I was just a dude who's talking about football and they're like, we need one of those. Do you want to do it? I'm like, yeah, of course I do. Cause I'm slinging pizza and beers down here in Westdale. So when I ended up getting the opportunity to actually go and be a part of it, and then to have it last 6 years and to give me the financial freedom and the exposure to be able to build my personal brand and to build my family. And there's a lot of good things that came out of it for sure, but I'm looking forward to finding out what's next, because I have no clue. So if anybody is interested, let me know.
We can put your resume in the description here.
This is a good job interview, hopefully.
It took you no time at all, really, to kind of rebound from that layoff with the Canadian football perspective. Just with the few weeks that you know, that's really been your one, you know, your driving force. So what has the feedback been like from, the market, and also, how do you feel about the product?
Yeah, it's interesting because it is, it's a local creation that is based in GTA fandom, but the GTA fandom gave us the confidence to know that we should be expanding it to a wider range of Canadian football fans, because I think that it exists in Hamilton, Toronto, Oakville, Burlington, Oshawa, Whitby, Pickering, the same way that it does in Esteban or in, Brandon, Manitoba, or in, places out east that have fans or people in the United States. I mean, 10% of our podcast downloads come from the United States. And we're just talking CFL. We're talking Canadian football. So I think that I've enjoyed it a lot because it's my passion. It's the thing that makes it really easy to get out of bed in the morning and mm-hmm. to want to create unique analysis for people and create discussions. And the thing that I've always believed about media is that people always ask me that are coming out of university programs, colleges, whatnot, what should I do to be successful? I'm like, well, there's a lot of variables that go into that, and I'm still figuring out half of them. Mm-hmm. But one thing that I have figured out that I really, truly believe in is you have to look at the marketplace, right? And I'm not a stock trader. I wasn't in on GameStop or AMC Theaters, any of that stuff. I'm not in on NFTs. I don't know anything about banking. I still like to go and have my checks signed by somebody because, like I said, I'm an elderly person. But when I look at what media is, to me, if I wanted to talk Blue Jays, it wouldn't make sense. Sportsnet's so much better at talking Blue Jays than I am. If I want somebody to listen to me, I'm not going to talk Leafs all day because O-Dog's smarter at hockey than I am. It's the reality is you can learn things, but that lived experience, that's unique to certain people and what they have done with their life. Well, what have I lived? What have I been around? Canadian football. So why not focus in on Canadian football? In media, you have to find a void, and then you fill that void with whatever your talents and your creativity can create. And I think that's what CFP is really born out of, is the idea that this is an underserved community. This is a group of people that love Canadian football from the high school ranks to university in Canada to the pros. They're just starving for more coverage. They're starving for more stories to be told. Mm-hmm. They want to be able to have, I think, just more content and varied content as well. I don't think it always has to be the write-up about somebody. I don't think that it always has to be the 20-minute sit-down interview. It can be a podcast, but it can also be a video. It can be an X's and O's breakdown. It can be an immediate after the game, post game show that we're doing live on Twitch. I mean, there's so many possibilities now in modern media creation that you really just have to kind of explore the space a little bit and find out what sticks. And that's the fun part of the early stages of CFP, is finding out what sticks. What do people like? The reception, I would say, has been overwhelmingly positive. I've gotten DMs from people in the CFL, in U Sports, that are super, super enthusiastic to have us being part of the landscape, because they've felt like this sport in this country needs a higher grade of coverage. And it's not that I'm bashing on the people that do what they do, whether that's Naylor, Farhan, Lalji, Justin Dunk. I mean, there's different entities that you can get your information from. But for me, again, finding the void inside of the void is, okay, the initial void is Canadian football. Well, there's lots of reporting, but are there actual football stories being told? Are there actual football conversations being had? Not really. I mean, at a high level, you don't turn on TSN on SportsCenter and somebody's breaking down X and O's for you on a Wednesday in February. People want that stuff. Like, people want to be able to understand the game, to learn more. And again, I'm not the smartest guy in the room. I admit that. I'm constantly learning, but I enjoy that challenge of talking to people that are smarter than me and just trying to keep up and just having fun with them in these conversations. And if I can try to keep up even slightly to some of the people that I'm talking to, that's good content. And that's engaging for people to listen to. So it's still a work in progress, but I've really enjoyed the challenge throughout the first while.
Yeah, I mean, you guys are probably going to get a huge influx of, you know, views and clicks because there wasn't a season last year. And with there being a season this year, you know, people are hungry for that type of content. With that said, is there a specific story that you're looking forward to the most covering this season?
Ooh, man, I think the Argos story of how you throw a bunch of names and talent and veterans and a young quarterback and a first-time head coach into the same pot. Mm-hmm. And how does that come out? I think that's a really intriguing one. Another one is Masoli and Dane Evans. I think Masoli is going to be the starter, but Dane Evans is worthy of being a starter. He proved that last year, 2019, yeah, I should say. So in Hamilton, that's a storyline. I mean, in Saskatchewan, if you're looking at it, for me, it's how does Cody Fajardo continue to evolve and get better with Jason Moss as his offensive coordinator for the first time. In BC, it's can you protect Mike Riley? Because if you can't, then you're paying somebody several hundreds of thousands of dollars to not do what you need him to do, which is stand upright and throw the football. In Edmonton, it's are the Ottawa Redblacks of 2018 good enough to win the Grey Cup now that they're all in Edmonton? Right, because they've taken the assistant GM and Brock Sunderland, the offensive coordinator is now the head coach Jamie Elizondo, the quarterback's Trevor Harris, the receiver's Greg Ellingson. They got Rose over there, the DB, I think. So it's like that's a fun one to me. Calgary is can Bo Levi climb over the top of Fajardo and Riley and Kolaros in Winnipeg? And I mean, it's just that's going to be a fight throughout the entire year. Ottawa, Lapalisse trying to keep them out of the bottom of the East, and Montreal, Vernon Adams Jr., does he have the ability to, similar to Fajardo, keep that upwards trajectory, or was 2019 a one-off and now it's going to come back down to earth over time because they've signed him up to a contract in both those cities that I think they'd like to see them continue to be successful. But success in the CFL and sticking around is difficult, especially at the quarterback spot, if you don't have a kind of that evolution, that next step that you're willing to take, and both those guys are up against it. So I know it's a long answer, but it's, to me, part of the reason why I enjoy this is when you look around the league, there's 10 storylines on every team that are worth diving into and trying to figure out. The exciting thing for me, and I always kind of get the goosebumps on this, but especially in this year coming out of a year without games, the first time that we play a game, I always have a moment of realization as I'm sitting down to track the game and do my analytical stats breakdown, or just to sit down with a beer and enjoy the game. And I always think to myself, man, we're about to actually get answers. Like, how long have I been talking about this stuff for months and months throughout the last off season? And we're about to actually get some answers. And it feels so good to get those answers. And that's the thing that's driving me right now, is knowing that at some point we're going to get the answers that we're all longing for on these tons of questions that are out there on every single team. And in the U Sports ranks as well, they didn't play a year as well. So getting answers on how does Mac bounce back from winning in 2019 and then graduating a bunch of offensive linemen, what are they going to look like? How's Western going to evolve their running game? I mean, it's, you can always find things to analyze, but I'll be real with you, without seasons played in 2020, we're running out of stuff to analyze. We need something new to talk about. And my hope and my drive is that we're going to get that as soon as is possibly to be able to done, to do if it's safe. And it's something that we're longing for sure.
Yeah. I mean, you can only go to the well so many times before it's dried, but I'm sure that, you know, there's thousands of people here across the entire country that are looking forward to that season. And I myself, but Marshall, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me today. You know, hearing people like yourself who are so passionate about Canadian football just brings a lot of hope and brings, you know, a lot of happiness to the sport. So thank you so much for taking the time, man.
Thank you, Matt. I appreciate it. It was fun to catch up with you. I hope you're doing well. I got to say, too, I was bugging you before we started going, your backdrop is way doper than mine. What is that chair? What is that chair that you're sitting in? This looks like it's like a fur. What is that made of? Some exquisite, like, animal? What is that?
It's lumbar. I think it's bamboo.
No, you can't beat bamboo. Strength and lightweight. It's essential to
building. I think it's one of those cheaper X chairs that are all over the TV.
Fair enough. It's all
appreciate
good.
No,
it's great to catch up with you, man. Talk later.